Good morning.
Good morning.
And to all the dads, happy Father's Day. So for our family, it's a little strange that our youngest is now out of elementary school, so we're all a middle school, high school family at this point. You start to wonder, and I know I'm not alone in this, but where did the years go? I've got employees that are similar age, a little bit younger than I am, and they're having younger kids. We just happened to start our family pretty early. But it feels weird to be out of the toddler and little kid stage. I get to live vicariously by kind of hanging out with their kids or with my niece and nephew. But again, where do the years go? And I was thinking just the other day as I was preparing the message about an experience that we had when our kids were really little. We like to teach them to swim. I grew up on boats and sailboats and all of these things, and so swimming was kind of one of those important first safety steps. And we had heard that if you got them swimming right away, and it's funny because you see parents' strategies for their first one, like Ella's the one we made all the mistakes on for these things. I think I got her down a water slide way sooner than she ever probably should have. Dumped her into the water in the pool way sooner than, you know, we did even for our later children. We're like, I think it's time. There was a lot of ice cream bribery along the way for that. But we were at the pool in Delta. That's where we had lived in Ohio before. And there was a community pool there, and they were getting ready for swim lessons. And I had Ella, and I think this was Anna, who was standing on the edge of the pool getting ready to jump in. And Anna was just a little thing. She was tiny. And there's this whole, Dad, are you sure? Dad, are you sure? Dad, are you sure? And many of you parents have been in that same place where the kid's kind of terrified to just jump into the water, to jump into your arms as you're there. And as a parent, you're trying not to have them jump really on you, but in the water in front of you so that you can catch them. You're trying to help build that confidence, to get them ready to get in the water. And for me, again, I used incentives a lot, as a good economist would. Others might call it bribery to get their kids into the water to do these things. But Anna had jumped in, and I caught her, and things were going so well. But there was another dad just a few feet away in the pool from me who was trying to do the same thing, and he seemed like a really nice guy. And he's promising his daughter, I'm going to catch you. Don't worry. I'm going to catch you. Don't worry. And you can see this little girl is very timid. She's like, Dad, are you sure you're going to catch me? And he's like, I will catch you. And I watched this happen in slow motion as the dad had kind of tried and tried and tried. And in his mind, I'm sure he was taking a quick break. And he turns and he talks to the mother, and his eyes are no longer on his daughter. But that daughter on the edge of the pool, the whole time the mind had been turning and she'd been building up courage. And it just happened that as he turned away and is having a quick conversation with his wife, the daughter decides it's time. And she jumps in the water. And she plunges under completely. And, again, I wish I was closer. I wish I could have helped. But it all happened so fast. And the dad gets his daughter out of the pool. And she was okay. She had to cough up a little bit of water like many kids do when they first try that out. But I can only imagine how many more days, weeks, months, maybe even years it took to get that little girl to jump back into the water. Because he made promise after promise, no, I've got you, I've got you. I'll make sure you don't go under. I'll make sure you don't have any problems. And then it just happened to be, I don't think he meant to lie to her. I don't think he meant not to tell her the truth, but it just happened to be in that timing that the promise was broken. God says that our relationship with him is that as of a father and child, son or daughter. And some of you have had wonderful earthly relationships with your fathers, and that makes that picture work well. You're able to see God as a father, and that makes sense, but others of you, maybe like that little girl in that moment, have had times that you tried to rely on your earthly father and it didn't work out, it didn't go well. Your father made a promise that they didn't or couldn't keep. And that breaks trust and it makes it hard to connect to our Father in heaven. Like Beth, I am grateful that I had a wonderful father. There's only one lie that he told me that stands out. And that was when I was a kid and he was eating some beer nuts. Those are like honey roasted peanuts watching a football game. I said, "Dad, can I have some of those?" And he says, "No, son, they're beer nuts. Can't share them." And I believed him. I think I was 15 years old when I'm with a group of friends and they're eating beer nuts. And I was like, "No, we can't have those." And I felt a little foolish when I was given the explanation. But again, I have a great dad. He kept his promise to me. We'll chalk that one up. We'll give him a freebie on the beer nuts. But Jesus is talking to the crowd. And again, as he's talking to the crowd on the Sermon on the Mount here, I think he's really talking to the Pharisees, to the religious leaders. And he's helping them understand that they need a greater form of righteousness. They need righteousness that surpasses that of the Pharisees. And we talked about this in anger and this idea of murder in our hearts. We looked over the past few weeks at the idea of lust and this idea that lusting with intent in our hearts is the same as committing adultery in our hearts. It crosses that line. Talked about divorce, and now we're talking about this idea of honesty and specifically in the language of oaths. We know it's important as a father to be an honest father, to be a father with integrity. But I think that as we look at how Jesus deals with the Pharisees, how Jesus calls us to a greater form of righteousness here, we can all be better dads, better moms, better aunts, better uncles, better grandparents. So we dive into this idea of having deep integrity. Well, Jesus begins, again, talking to the most rigidly religious class of his day, the Pharisees, in the Sermon on the Mount. And he shares the problem of oaths. Matthew chapter 5, verse 33 and 34. Again, you have heard that it was said to people long ago. He's talking about the law, and he's talking about some of the extra things around the law that the Pharisees and scribes had written. "Do not break your oath, but fulfill to the Lord the vows you have made. But I tell you, do not swear an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is God's throne," or later he says, "by the earth, for it is God's footstool." So what's going on here? What is an oath? Well, an oath is a special kind of promise. It's a promise that we swear with some collateral. And I think it's important for us to understand that the Pharisees had narrowed the idea of honesty, had narrowed the idea of integrity so much that the oath was about it. See, they had all of these fun practices that remind me of my kids crossing their fingers behind their back. The more you read these things, the more you scratch your head about the practices that the Pharisees had, even in their own books of explanation of the law. So you could, if you made an oath and you swore by God, you better keep that oath because you swore it by God. But they would get creative if you swore it by Jerusalem, the city of God. Well, then you didn't have to keep that oath. That was kind of the trick one. That was the fingers crossed behind the back. There were all of these creative ways that, again, if you swore by God or something close enough to God, but if you swore by yourself, then you weren't really responsible, or you didn't have to keep that oath or that promise or that commitment that was made. And these are the religious teachers. These are the guys that are running the synagogue or the temple, the church, as they knew it then. It was also surprising in my research that there wasn't an expectation for a Jew to keep a promise or tell the truth to a Gentile. And we saw this some as we looked at Abraham. And again, I just chalk that up to this idea that, you know, Abraham wasn't perfect. But in the Jewish teachings, it was okay to lie to a non-believer, to a Gentile, to somebody who wasn't part of the Jewish
faith.
So it leads to this question, what is it, why do we tell the truth? Why is honesty important? Is it just social utility? Is it just because if I lie to somebody close to me, it never works out? I mean, try that with your spouse. If you lie to your spouse, I guarantee you it might take an hour. In my case, 5 minutes. It might take a day, a week, a year, but that lie will turn out as a catastrophe. It always does. I have not met one person who lied to their spouse or someone close to them and everything just went great. The lie always leads to more lies, more drama, more problems. And what is it? It's the truth that sets us free. So there is social utility in telling the truth, and I think the Jewish leaders understood this, that if they lied to each other all the time, there were going to be problems, but they began again to narrow it to this idea of it's only a lie if I make an oath, if I swear by God. But not if I swear by Jerusalem. That's kind of a catch. It sounds religious. It sounds holy. And again, it reminds me of my kids, and I love my kids. I think your kids have probably done something similar. But I remember one day, and I can kind of hear it coming from the back room, and I know it's not going to go well, and I intervened probably just outside the nick of time. And I believe it was Ella, but it may have been one of the others. And they were talking to their sibling and convincing them to do their chores and some other things for them. And they said, well, I'll give you $10 if you do it. I'm like, what is going on here? Because I knew they didn't have $10. Anna, is this to you?
No, I looked at this.
Okay.
She never gave me that money.
Okay. But then, so what happens though, okay, true confession time. But what happens then is then, you know, it all breaks down. One's angry that they're not getting the money they thought they were promised. And then Ella says, well, I didn't promise like U.S. currency. And she goes to her doll and plucks 10 hairs off the head of her doll. I promised you 10 doll hairs. See, it's I was truthful. But that has to be how it felt if you had your religious teacher, the Pharisee in your neighborhood, at your local synagogue, at the temple, make a commitment to you and said, oh, but Jeff, I swore by Jerusalem. I know that that's God's city, but that's not really I didn't swear by God. So I had no intent of ever keeping that. I mean, that's the thing that breaks down the social fabric quite a bit. But that isn't even the main reason. There's great social utility in honesty. The lack of honesty will destroy community faster than many things will. But the reason that we are honest, the reason that Jesus calls us to integrity and honesty is because we are to reflect a God who is deeply honest. A God that is trustworthy. That when God makes a promise, he keeps that promise. And if we are to be God's people, when we make a promise, when we say this is what we will do, it's expected that we will do it because we are to reflect God. So the problem with oaths is that everything outside the oath was now room for dishonesty and deception and trickery. And again, that's so destructive to a community. If I came up here and told you promises but had my fingers crossed behind my back the whole time, that would make a good pastoral relationship. We're called to be trustworthy people because our God is trustworthy. And here Jesus is telling the Pharisees that he wants them not to narrow their idea of integrity and honesty, but to expand it. That it's not okay to lie or deceive, not even to the Gentile. Because remember, even all the way back in Abraham, the promise in the covenant would be that God's people, God's chosen people, would be a blessing. They would be a testimony to the world. And that doesn't happen when we lie. That doesn't happen when we deceive or bend the truth. The second piece that we see, and I think it's important, it's easy to miss, is that Jesus is helping the Pharisees to recognize the sacred within the secular. And this is one of those ideas, these concepts of faith that's been transformative for my life. Verse 35, he's talking about swearing, and he says, "Or swear by earth, for it is God's footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot even make one hair on your head white or black." Jesus is saying, these things that don't feel like swearing by me, that don't seem that sacred, they are sacred because even God controls the hair that grow on your head. The earth is God's footstool. As we learn in the book of Colossians, this idea that all things are held within the hand of Jesus. Every atom of the universe is held. It's held by Jesus. It's the beautiful picture we see in the book of Colossians. There is no separation between the secular and the sacred. As if you're a dad like me, your kids are going to pay far more attention to the things you do outside the walls and doors of this church than things you do inside. I hear people say, "Well, don't swear in church. Don't lie in church. Don't tell dirty jokes in church or crass stories." Well, I don't know that we have to put the words "in church" after it. Just don't do those things. We're called to be the same people inside this room that we are outside, when we're at the grocery store, when we're at work, when we're babysitting maybe the grandkids or the great-grandkids, when we're in class, on the playground, at the restaurant. We're called to be the same. That's what integrity is. It's that we are the same no matter where or how we are. That we're the same when we're frustrated. That we're the same when the waitress or waiter brings out our food and it's completely wrong and slightly burnt. When we're waiting in a line at the grocery store, or for me, it's all of those automated checkout things that you'd think being an IT person I could figure out, but I never can. It's just always yelling at me. And I have 40 things to ring up, and I'm the first one is, you know, supervisor's coming because I didn't scan it correctly. Because maybe I had too many things in my hand. I don't know. But integrity is being the same person in that moment of frustration that you are when you're here on Sunday morning, all cleaned up in the pews to worship. Because we can worship God in anything. Beth mentioned the curtain in the temple being torn, that veil. And in the temple, there was the holy place, and there was the Holy of Holies, and the Holy of Holies is a picture, and again, the temple in the book of Hebrews is shown to us to be a reflection, even though a foggy reflection of heaven. And so there's a throne room of God in heaven, and the temple is a picture, a reflection of the throne room of God from heaven. And in that temple, there's the Ark of the Covenant, and that is to be the throne of God. And once a year, on the Day of Atonement, the priest would go in and he would make sacrifices there on the altar, on the throne of God. But he would do so with a rope and bells around his ankle. Because if his heart wasn't right, if he was trying to be holy that one day but hadn't been the rest of the year, he wasn't going to make it. And as many of these things, there's a sign because it's happened. This past week, I was amazed how many times I had to hear on the news, "Whatever you do, don't pick up a down power line." Well, yes, please, please don't. But there's a reason they have to tell us that, because sometimes people do. And the reason they put a rope around the ankle of the priest, the high priest, and bells there to hear if he was still moving around is there were occasional years the high priest would go in there and he would drop dead to the floor and they would have to pull him out because he wasn't consistent. And they were terrified to go into the Holy of Holies because it was a place that represented the throne room of God. But when Jesus died on the cross, when he took his last breath, there was thunder, there was lightning. It was an amazing scene that made believers out of Roman soldiers who were hardened. But then as this earthquake happened, the veil of the temple was torn in two. And I hate to even use the word symbolic because it's so deep and it's so meaningful. And I don't want the word symbolic to ruin that for us. But it's a symbol of what happens between us and God. This veil, this separation is torn. And now we have access to the Father so that everything we do can be an act of worship. But if we let the flesh creep in, if we take Jesus out of the driver's seat, if we don't pursue that greater righteousness that comes through the Holy Spirit, through having the Spirit of Christ within us, then what should be, could be worship becomes something else. It can't be worship if we're being dishonest and deceitful. It's not worship if our heart is filled with lust. It's not worship if we have anger and hatred towards our brother. And that's what Jesus is talking about here. He's saying everything you do can be as special and as powerful and as worshipful as Sunday morning or Saturday for the Jewish people. It can be like coming and making sacrifice in the temple to be with your kids, to teach them, to do nighttime, bath time. Again, all of these things in life that may seem mundane, that happen day over day over day, can be sacred, even though they feel secular. Dads, your kids are watching. Whether you're babysitting, shopping, eating at the restaurant, being a patient at the hospital, that's a big one. It's a hard one. You feel like garbage and things aren't going well and you're not so sure your doctor's done everything right. That can be worship. As we let Christ take control of our attitudes, they can all be forms of worship as we bear the image of Christ and are filled with His Spirit. And finally, we see the power of honesty and integrity. Verse 37, all you need to say is yes or no. Anything beyond this is from the evil one. Or other translations just say is evil. Because there shouldn't be a separation. It shouldn't be, I tell the truth when I make an oath, and when I don't make an oath, it doesn't matter. It's a great test of how you're doing today. If you took a week and you stopped saying, I swear or I promise, do your friends and family still believe you? Is a simple yes or no enough? If so, great. But if not, we have work to do. If it requires a no, I promise that this time I'll do what I said I would do. That means that you're not trustworthy. At least you haven't been. If it requires, and I swear, bring out the Bible. I'll swear on the Bible. I'll swear on my mother. I'll swear on your mother. If it requires that, if you feel the need to do that, then there is a breakdown in your integrity. And whether you're a husband, a father, a wife, a mother, a grandparent, that breakdown in integrity shows. I've said it before, I've talked to grandkids and kids of some of our families of churches past and asked them, you know, you grew up in the church, why don't you go anymore? And the number one answer I hear is because if being a Christian is what mom and dad are like, I'm not sure I want to do that. Because mom and dad are angry and mom and dad aren't truthful because, and you fill in the blank. There is power in the testimony of honesty and integrity. This is often where I get asked the question about situational ethics. Pretty much, is it okay sometimes to lie? And it can be as cute as, what do I do when my wife asks me, do these pants make me look fat? I just choose to run away. I will not say anything helpful in that moment. I just choose not to. But the last thing I want to do is to have my wife be embarrassed and go out in public because there's something like a tag stuck to the back of her pants. We've all done that, right? Where you get a new pair of pants and it's got the sticker on it still. Just advertising to the world the length and width of your pants. It's what everybody loves. That's everybody's great day. But I think honesty is important. Because the last thing we want to do is set our family up for failure. When my kids ask me, how did the speech go? I don't tell them it went great. If it didn't go great, I say, how can I help you? How can we work together? You can build up confidence and self-esteem without lying. We can tell the truth. The harder one is the question, and again, every ethics class generally begins with this story or this scenario. And it's, say you're back in Nazi Germany and you have a house and you're hiding Jewish people in that house, and the SS come to the door and they knock and they ask you the question, are you hiding Jews? Or are there any Jews in the house? Is it okay to lie then? And I've had friends that are deep, deep men of faith who have said, no, you shouldn't lie. And they're saying it from a heart that would trust that God would do a miracle in that moment. That those soldiers would either drop dead or that they would be martyred and they would be welcomed into heaven together. Now, I'm going to be honest with you here, because I think if I told you anything else, I'd be lying. I don't know what I would do in that situation. I hope I would do what God wants me to do, but I don't know what I would do in that situation. And I don't know that any of us do. So we can get caught up in some of these little things. Is there ever a reason? Is it ever right? But I think Jesus' point was that we need to be honest in everything we do because we are a reflection of God. When that moment comes, we may pass the test and we may not. But that is why God has given us grace. So there is a here and now and there is a future element to this. There are things that we do in response to the grace of Jesus that show a greater righteousness. But even in doing those things, if all of us today said, I will do my best and I will never lie, it's not going to be enough because we will fall. In the same way that Jesus is indicting everyone with lust, everyone with anger, he's indicting all of us with honesty. We all fall short. None of us can, again, remember the picture, jump to the moon. But that's why Jesus died on the cross, and that's why our sins are forgiven, just like all the other brothers and sisters in the faith. But out of a response to that, out of the great joy that comes with the grace we received, God calls us to be consistent and honest people. If you ask those who were outside of the church to describe church people, Christians in one word, and I don't have to guess on this because polling has done it, any idea in your own mind what that one word would be that the non-believing waitresses on Sunday waiting on church people, I know some of them would use the word cheap. Because I've talked to waitresses that have gotten no tip for brunch. Big group of people that all left church that were excited about Jesus and just left a little gospel track on the table and said, this is worth far more than a tip. But if you were to put it all together, the number one word that's used to describe Christians by non-Christians, if you talk to the Gallup polling Barna, it's the word hypocrite. It's this idea that we don't do what we profess, that we are inconsistent. Imagine if we were able to turn that around, if we truly became a people of honesty and integrity, if we weren't sitting behind like the Pharisees with our fingers crossed behind our backs, if we weren't lying to those outside in the world, if we treated the waitress at the restaurant, the clerk at the store, the teacher at the school, our next door neighbor with the same love and kindness and respect and integrity that we do our own children or those in the church. Imagine the powerful testimony if the number one word that people outside the church knew from Christians they encountered was that they are honest people. What do you think of Christians? They are honest people. They are good and honest and faithful people. None of us will be perfect. I'm not trying to set that bar for you today. You will fall short in all of these areas of greater righteousness. But what if that was how the world saw us? I think the promise that God made to Abraham that his descendants would become a blessing, that God would show the beauty and the fullness of this relationship in us, and the world would see it and say, wow, I want in on that. I've seen glimpses of this. I've seen glimpses of this when a 14 or 15-year-old gets super excited about Jesus and chooses to begin to sit at the lunch table that no one else sits at with the kid who's almost always by themselves and shares Christ and friendship and kindness to that kid who'd been ridiculed and hurting. What if there was a Christian like that in the life of each of those school shooters we've heard about in the news? Would it have taken more than one Christian to say, you're my brother, I care about you? I don't know. But if we can be people of integrity, it'll surprise the world. The expectations are low. I was watching one of the channels that I don't even know what it's called over the air, and they had the A-Team on. I haven't watched the A-Team in a long time, and I was watching it this weekend. And a commercial came on for a pet spray. And I was kind of excited because we have a puppy and we have an older dog, and if there was something that could miraculously remove pet odors in one spritz, I would be all about it right now. So I'm watching, and for $29.99, it's so safe that the host could spray it in their mouth and it was non-toxic. And all it took was one spray and it completely eliminated the odors. And I'm getting kind of excited. But then I made the mistake, at least for my excitement, and I looked it up online. And most of the reviews said, I think it might just be a $30 bottle of water. It tastes like water, it looks like water, it smells like water, and when you spray it on a stain, it just smells worse. But isn't that, you see these claims on TV, and it all looks too good to be true. We don't trust really any of it. You could come out with the greatest product in the world, and most of it would be like, yeah, I doubt it. Because we live in a world that lacks integrity. If we can be that witness, if we can show that example of what it means to be truthful and honest and loving and kind, I think it would change the world.